Now, when I speak through an interpreter to the doctor, I feel more relaxed. I feel less anxious. I'm in a country that is not mine. Once I've talked, it is very good. The interpreter keeps the series I tell. We have a proverb that says that if the person is happy psychologically, that is half the treatment. Now, once we communicate through an interpreter, we feel less stress. We trust him. It proves of psychology. Without the interpreter, we can't communicate with the doctor and we feel more stressed.
The doctor at the hospital explained to me that I am at high risk of getting tuberculosis. The news was scary, but I was glad the interpreter was there. As a family member or friend would not have told me this information in advance.
These are some of the responses from people who have been using interpreter services in Victoria's medical facilities. Translation and interpreter services in hospitals and other medical facilities are vital for people who have trouble understanding Australia's common language, English. And the scale of this need for language services is enormous and growing. So at a recent Quality of Healthcare conference in Melbourne, the chair of the Victorian Hospitals Diversity Network, Celia Wigzell, presented the paper. I said, "Do you speak my language?" He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. You probably know the name of the song that this is from, but here Ms. Wigzell plays on the fact that one language, just like Vegemite, does not suit everyone, and healthcare deserves clear communication and understanding, as well as a smile. As Celia Wigzell explains, the role of language services is vital at every step of healthcare.
It's incredibly difficult for a patient to negotiate their healthcare or understand a diagnosis or even give an informed consent if they can't understand what a medical practitioner is saying to them. Under the Victorian Health Act, we're legally bound to provide information in a manner in which the patient can understand. And if that patient doesn't speak English, then it's obvious that means we need to have language services available for those people.
How large are the community groups that need translation services throughout Victoria?
It varies from region to region. Obviously, in the metro region, we have the highest need. Western Health is probably the highest. We have between 35 and 45% of our patients speak languages other than English. And then there's Northern Health and Southern, which also have very high needs. And there are some rural areas like Warrnambool, who've accepted refugee communities, recently arrived people into their community, and they also have increasing needs.
You're saying certain communities in need of specialist services. What are some of the other distinct communities that need specific services?
Our European communities are ageing. So if you look at the Greeks and the Italians, the Polish communities, etc., most of our interpreting for those communities happened in aged care. So it's about home rehabilitation or a lot of allied health services, a lot of help in the home type services those communities need. Whereas our newly arrived communities from the Sudan and other parts of Africa, for example, at Western Health, they're our biggest customers in obstetrics. So they're an incredibly rapidly growing community and the women have lots of children. So we see them in obstetrics. So depending on where the communities are at in terms of an ageing population, we'll place them in certain points in the healthcare system.
Now, how does contact usually work if somebody is ill, someone from Macedonia is ill? How do they go about getting together themselves with an interpreter and then an interpreter with a doctor? What's the step-by-step situation?
It's probably quite different in different hospitals. We'd all have different systems of supply, but certainly for a lot of us, the patient doesn't even really get to know what goes on in terms of it should be that they just turn up for their appointment if they have an outpatient's appointment, for example, and the interpreter is there for them. So when we register a patient, we have those details in our patient registration system that they need an interpreter, and when their appointment is booked, the interpreter is booked. So we then book an interpreter to turn up to be there when the patient turns up. Some hospitals have in-house interpreters, so they employ full-time interpreters to work on staff, and otherwise they use agency interpreters. It wouldn't be unusual for the ED, the emergency department at Footscray, to have 45% of the people who come through the door not being able to speak English.
What happens in a situation like that? We talked about how if you have an appointment and you come in and a translator is there ready to go, what happens in an emergency department?
They have the use of a telephone service, so sometimes they have to rely on telephone. It's actually not always as difficult as sometimes we think it might be in emergency, because if someone comes in, for example, as a road trauma victim, they aren't going to worry about any talking very much at all, whether you can speak English or not. They're just going to treat you to keep you alive. If you come in and you've broken your leg, you know, they may have 30 minutes or so to play with before that you're being treated and your leg's being set. And that gives them enough time to either get a telephone or sometimes even to pull in an on-site interpreter. They do have 24/7 access.
It's embarrassing for my son or daughter to interpret. My kids say, "Mom, you shouldn't say all these private things to the doctor." So I feel embarrassed. I feel frustrated. I say to my children that I want them to interpret what I say, but they refuse. So I prefer a professional interpreter.
What are some of the culturally sensitive issues, and how are these handled?
It can be gender. In some communities, it's highly inappropriate to provide a female with a male interpreter, especially if the appointment is in obstetrics or gynaecology or something like that. So gender in some of the really newly arrived smaller communities, they might know the interpreter, the person who turns up to be the interpreter, because the community is so small. And so then you worry about compromises around privacy for people and confidentiality, especially given that in newly arrived communities, often the interpreters aren't qualified because they haven't been here long enough to get qualified. And then there's also just some of the historical divides between groups. So you've got to be careful, for example, with some areas of the world, that it's not necessarily just language, but you need to make sure that ethnically you provide the right kind of interpreter.
Children can downplay the severity of our condition to prevent us from worrying. At least with an interpreter, we are told the truth.
I worry about it being too much money for the government. I feel embarrassed to ask all the time. My husband has chronic asthma and needs a lot of medical help. I feel embarrassed asking for an interpreter all the time.
Hospitals receive funding directly for their language services, and we actually argued for that. We wanted that because we wanted to be able to go out into the open market and buy our language services as we saw fit, because across the system our needs are very different. So, for example, Dinka, the Dinka language, one of the Sudanese languages, is really big for us at Sunshine Hospital. So we might do 100 or 150 Dinka interpreting occasions at Sunshine, and it's good for me to be able to go out and just buy those services off the best interpreters I can find in that community. So in one of the problems that we face is that it's very different. For more remote areas, they probably need access to a government-funded health line, a credit line, where they can ring up and book what they need and not be paying directly.
Well, they seem too busy when they're interpreting. Suddenly the machine rings, beep, beep, then they have to use the desk telephone. Then they sit down to continue the interpreting, then beep, beep again. Now, there are up to 3 interruptions in each appointment. Many times this happens, then sometimes the conversation hasn't finished, and they say sorry, then leave in a hurry. This makes me lose my trust. I'm worried whether they interpret accurately.
At the conference, were doctors and other healthcare professionals very open to new ways of coordinating these services and new technologies coming in?
We're trying to get the language services issues on the quality agenda. We need a national strategic framework for cultural safety in healthcare. And that's the road the United States has gone down. The US has a national strategic framework. And Australia needs one too, given we're the second most multicultural country in the world, as far as I know. So we're pushing for quality, because it is the quality people in hospitals that would have a look at whether or not the care for a patient was adequate. And we're saying language services and cultural safety need to be on that agenda. On the whole, I think doctors are very pro language services because they realise after they've used that service for a while, it actually makes their life a lot easier. You know, you get a lot better interaction with a patient if you can actually speak with them clearly.